This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about Pisco.
Yes, which is going to be fun with pronunciation because we already had a bit of a pronunciation emergency. I mean, emergency is a strong word, but we had to look up what we're talking about.
Yeah, there are no emergencies in infotainment podcasting. I was like, okay, here you go. You ready to talk about Pisco? And Annie was like, you mean Pisco? And I was like, let us check. Let us super double check that one. I don't think I've ever heard this word out loud before.
Right. And I had heard it out loud, but as I was kind of joking, it was a bit of like 7 or 8 years ago, I was in Peru.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't familiar with this at the time, and my memory is fuzzy both from the Pisco and the time that has passed, will say.
Fair. Yes. Fair. Which brings us to our always note on episodes like this, drink responsibly.
Yes. I did go to Peru a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've told this story before because I could have sworn up and down, this is happening more often, Lauren, that we had already done a Pisco episode. We have not.
I had to check as well. So,
yes. I think we've talked about it before, and I think I told the story before, but I will tell it again because I don't know. I'm a huge nerd. I'm sure that's no surprise to anybody.
Huh.
And I saw this, I think it was in Lima, but it might not have been. It might have been in Cusco. But I saw this place and it was called, translated, the Museum of Pisco.
Okay.
I was like, ooh, a museum.
Yeah.
And I walked in and I went up to the front and it was a very clean white space. It had a whole illustration of how Pisco is made and the history of Pisco on the walls. And I went up to what appeared to be a bar. And I was like, I would like one ticket to the museum, please. And the guy gave me such a deadpan stare.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, this isn't a museum, it's a bar. Just the name of the bar. Would you like some Pisco? And I was like, well, yes, please.
In that case, I will take one drink of Pisco. Thank you.
It was so embarrassing. And I still have it's like a postcard, but it has the process of how to make Pisco. And he did. He was very informative and he told me how to make it. But that was sort of my first. Well, I was like, oh, I want to learn about this. I've never heard about it before. Was not a museum. Nope. And I tried to buy the ticket in my very broken Spanish. And I'm sure he probably tells the story as well.
I am positive that is not the only time that a mistake has occurred, because and I've seen that in other bars that are named things that are kind of quirky, where they're like, we don't sell hardware here, ma'am and or sir. Would you like a drink? That's what we got, man.
It worked on me. It was effective. I came in. I was like, oh, I'm going to learn so much. Was there any particular reason this was on your mind?
No, zero. None at all. I think that I was looking through our ideas sheet, and I think the Pisco, I'm going to do this all episode. I was looking through our ideas sheet, and the Pisco Sour was on there, as it has been for the entire time we've been doing this show. And so I've vaguely had it in my head to do a Pisco episode for this entire time, but now is the time.
now is the time. Have you ever had any?
I am trying to. I've been trying to figure that out this entire time. I've been reading about this for this outline. I don't think so. Ooh. So this is a super rare. I have absolutely, as far as I can tell, no experience with this product. And you, the tables are turned, Annie. You have all of this experience.
The tables are turned. Now I get to see what it's like to live on the other side. I think one of the reasons I thought we'd already done this episode is over on Stuff I've Never Told You, the other podcast that I am on. We have a happy hour segment every week, once a week. And as part of that, we highlight women in the beverage industry. It doesn't have to be alcohol.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah,
and we did one on women who were distilling Pisco. So if you're interested in that, you can go check it out. It's very good. Very good. Because we try it during the episode, which is always a risk, but it was fun.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's definitely, I'm super interested in it now. I'm also relatively unfamiliar with brandy as a category, and so yeah, I'm like, oh man, am I gonna go try to find a bottle of Pisco like once we finish this recording? Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I support it. I support it. The first Saturday in February is International Pisco Sour Day in Peru, and Pisco Day in Peru is the fourth Sunday in July. And I suspect, Lauren, and I would love for listeners to write in, there are more days of Pisco around the world. Somehow, tangentially, it's just a feeling in my gut.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would tentatively agree with you.
Okay, I will take that. You can see our wine episodes for more info, related info.
Yeah, about grapes for sure. Also, kind of generally, our liquor episodes. I think we get a little bit into the history of distillation in the Scotch episode specifically. And then also the Whiskey Sour Cocktail Hour episode.
That's fun.
Isn't it? Isn't that great to say? Yeah. yeah, that one goes into the history of sours, which is going to be, we're going to glance through. But yeah, for a deeper history, go see that episode.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. But I guess this brings us to our question.
I think it does, because we've been running roughshod over a number of topic categories without really explaining what the heck we're talking about.
Yeah. As we're wont to do. yes. Okay. Let's fix that. Pisco. What is it?
Well, Pisco is a type of liquor distilled from wine made from grapes, a type of brandy. Although it is often clear in color, it's not usually considered like a neutral spirit the way vodka might be, because Pisco is often quite flavorful. But it can range from like fruity to floral to herbal to funky to earthy. I feel like Brandy has a little bit of a reputation, like a bad reputation for being kind of cloying or sweet or single note in a lot of the United States. And that's just super unfair to the sheer breadth that's possible within the style. So, but Pisco can be a lot of things. It's generally warming and grape-ish. And like I said, I don't have a lot of experience with this one, so like y'all tell me. I have the notion that it's like a dream of wine. it's like stranger and more ethereal or ephemeral.
Yeah. I would agree. I feel like, as you said, it can taste a lot of ways, and I had experiences with sweeter ones. I had some way more in your face ones, but it was one of the things, and I think this is also just because of like my palate, and I hadn't had it until I was, you know, in college or after college. Mm-hmm. That every sip was kind of like surprising. Like, ooh,
oh fun.
Ooh. Yeah. Like, it's not that it was different, it's just like it was hard for me to anticipate it. It was like every time. Oh, huh. Interesting.
Just like there's a lot going on, and like in a way that you hadn't specifically had before. So you were exactly. Just like, oh, huh.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Huh, cool. Oh, okay. I need to find some. Okay. All right. So there are two main varieties of pisco, Peruvian and Chilean. Both are made from grapes that grow in fairly arid regions and thus tend to be sweet and strong in flavor, the grapes. They're fermented into wine, and then that wine is distilled into pisco. They may be made from blends of grapes or from single grapes, from fully fermented wines or from wines that are stopped partway through fermentation. The Peruvian types have more restrictions on their creation because they have a designation of origin, which is one of those sets of rules meant to guarantee the quality of a product by restricting the production to specific and often traditional methods. Peruvian styles are made from any of 8 types of grapes. They are distilled once, and they are aged briefly in ceramic, metal, or glass, and then bottled at barrel proof, which is 38% to 48% alcohol by volume. The result can range from clean to funky to earthy to bright with fruit and a little bit fiery. The Chilean types have fewer restrictions placed on their creation. They are made from any of 13 types of grapes, though I've seen that number range. I'm not totally sure. If anyone does know, please write in. They can be aged in wood barrels, and often are, to develop the flavor. That can also give them a little bit of a amber color. They can be distilled multiple times if you want to do that, and they can be bottled at a lower proof. The result is often fruity and floral and smoother. Yeah, yeah. Pisco is often served neat or on the rocks for sipping, or yes, mixed into cocktails. It plays well with a lot of different fruit and herb flavors. I read that it's really great with just tonic, like a pisco and tonic, which is sometimes called a piston. Pisco, yes. And tonic. Yeah. I love it. But perhaps most commonly, it is made into a pisco sour, which involves lime juice and sugar, and may additionally involve an egg white and bitters. We've talked about this before on the show, but if you're skittish about having a raw egg white mixed into your drink, which is so lovely, it adds this foam and this creaminess that's really just aesthetically and palate pleasing. But if you're skittish about it because of like salmonella, okay, first of all, generally speaking, you do not need to worry about salmonella in raw eggs. The rate of salmonella in the United States anyway, and all other developed countries, is super low, like ludicrously low. You don't need to worry about it. If you're still worried about it, there has been actual research that has been done specifically with pisco sours, showing that if you take an egg white and you specifically add salmonella to it, like there's definitely salmonella in there, and then use that egg white to make a pisco sour, that salmonella is undetectable after 6 minutes and will have been completely inactivated after 9 minutes. So.
Wow.
So.
Science.
If you're still concerned, wait at least 6 minutes. Definitely 9 to be super safe. And then you're fine.
Can you imagine? Oh, so funny. I mean, more power to you. You do you. But if you were at a bar and the bartender's like, everything okay? Like, I'm just waiting 9 minutes.
Yeah, like I've started a timer. Don't worry. This is part of the process.
I'm all good. Well, I guess related. What about the nutrition?
Drink responsibly.
Yes, yes. We do have some numbers for you.
We do.
By some estimates, Peru has around 650 operating Pisco distilleries, and about 150 of those might be operating illegally.
Ooh, huh. There is a Peruvian wine and Pisco festival every March during the yearly grape harvest. It's called La Fiesta de la Vendimia. It's been running since 1958, and there is all of the stuff that you would expect from a festival, plus lots of distillery and winery tours, sandboarding. And yes, a beauty pageant, and the contestants, among other things, dance in a vat of grapes to crush them as part of the contest.
Uh-huh. Of course.
Of course. Of course. Like you do. as of 2019, the global market for Pisco was worth some $670 million and growing.
Yes. And in the past few decades, the U.S. Pisco market has experienced a lot of growth. The U.S. is the second largest importer of Pisco after Chile. American import of Pisco doubled between 2010 to 2014. So that's not that long to double.
Yeah.
And this is a bit of a reverse. Around 2000, Chile exported around 20 times more than Peru. But now Peru exports 2 to 3 times more than Chile. Still, Chile produces around 3 times as much as Peru annually as of 2013, 30 million liters to 9.5 million liters. And I actually find all of these numbers very, very interesting because it seems like then a lot of it's staying where it's made.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That balance is always fascinating.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and I think it's become clear that we've got kind of a tale of two Piscos going on here.
Uh-huh. Yes, we do. And we are going to get into the history of that tale as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So again, this is not the grape episode. I feel like, similar to potatoes, we're circling grapes a lot.
Yeah. It's a very broad topic. I mean, as we get into in every individual wine episode, like the history of every specific grape is so deep and so well recorded. Yes.
Yeah. Like down to the specific vine in some cases.
Oh, sure. So
like actual vines that have been held hostage.
Yeah.
So note about that. Also, as we've been hinting at, another history section, another fierce debate about origins, mm-hmm. mainly here between Peru and Chile. And a lot of sources I found definitely were a bit biased.
Oh, yeah.
In their arguments. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind. Sometimes, like, overtly so. And sometimes it felt like they maybe didn't realize it.
Fun.
Yeah. Just to keep that in mind. And also, ostensibly a food show. This is one of the episodes where I feel like it just showcases so much history that we could go into if we were a history show.
Mm-hmm.
This is the history section of a food show. But, like, it's interesting. It's got a lot going on about why there is this debate and all of this claim around who invented Pisco and what it even actually is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to try to break it down as much as I can. But as always, listeners, if you have personal experience or knowledge or resources, please let us know.
Oh, yeah, please.
Yes, because much of the debate here revolves around national pride and a fraught, competitive, complicated history between these two countries.
Mm-hmm.
A big piece of this feud has to do with the War of the Pacific from 1879 to 1883, when Peru and Bolivia fought against Chile, and Chile ultimately won. And obviously, this took a toll on the relationship between Chile and Peru that didn't go away when the war ended.
Mm-hmm.
And then things got worse later on when some Peruvian territory became a part of Chile. And that is we're going to talk about it more, but that's a big part of this argument is like, when was Chile Chile? When was Peru Peru? All that kind of stuff. All right. So as for the Peruvian claim to Pisco, most of the resources say Pisco got started when the Spanish introduced the country to their winemaking techniques. They introduced European grapes in the 1500s to Peru. Records from this time describe large vineyards in the area. Spanish missionaries founded the port of Pisco as the city of Santa Maria Magdalena de Pisco. So they kept the Quechua name Pisco, meaning bird, and then added the name of a saint.
Mm-hmm.
Most sources suggest that this is probably where the name Pisco comes from, because this is where Pisco, the beverage, was coming from.
There you go. Yeah. And the Quechua are a group of peoples and the languages that they speak indigenous to, yes, what is now Peru.
Mm-hmm. And then Peruvian winemakers working with grapes brought over from Spain. I found this in like a couple of places, but I would love if anybody has more information about this. They learned that the king of Spain had banned their wines due to the fact that they were competing a little too well.
Oh.
With European varieties and wines. So Peruvian vintners, they started leaning into distillation.
And distillation was really coming into its own around this time. Alcohol was beginning to be treated not just as a medicine, but as like a fun thing to drink in the late 1500s and early 1600s.
Yes, and the first known written reference to Pisco does come out of Peru from the 1570s, and by the early 1600s, there are written mentions of a type of brandy frequently called aguardiente, or grandee? I don't know. So this gets kind of muddled because many of them were Pisco-like or Pisco-adjacent, but they could have also been not Pisco, or how we would describe Pisco today.
Pisco today, yeah. Aguardiente is a larger category of brandies from this region. So
right, exactly. So that kind of gets mixed up a bit. There were also descriptions of how it was made, which clarifies things and is a way historians are more like, okay, this is probably Pisco. Mm-hmm. The oldest working distillery in Peru, Pisco Distillery, dates back to 1684. In 1687, Peru suffered a devastating earthquake that decimated a huge amount of their wine grapes and wine cellars. And it wasn't until the 18th century that the wine industry there started to recover. Mm. Okay, so Peruvians often argue that Pisco only started to pop up in Chile, or in the Chilean record anyway, after the war. And after Pisco was being made in Peru for decades, decades before. So a lot of Chile's argument comes from the fact that when records of Pisco first started popping up, there was no Peru, technically, and that Peru and Chile were one country. Therefore, they both have a claim to it. And then Peruvians argue back that they were two cultures, separate kingdoms with unique histories. And as mentioned, these two Piscos are very different products in many ways, which neither country disputes that. So, a lot of tensions.
Yeah. It is not for us to say one way or another.
We are simply
reporting that these are the arguments.
These are the arguments. This one kind of cracked me up. In 1936, Chile's former president, Gabriel Gonzalez, changed the name of a village that Chileans believe, where they believe an ancient Chilean civilization invented their version of Pisco, to Pisco Elqui. So changed the name of this village to that. And this did not go over well with many Peruvians. Many of them thought it was a blatant attempt to secure a trademark.
Oh.
I'm telling you, go look up some articles about this, listeners, because a lot of it is playful and, like, playfully fighting. Some of it is very much not. But, yeah, that kind of, I was like, wow, really? Chile banned the sale of Pisco from Peru in 1961, and Peru did the same for Chilean Pisco about three decades later.
Wow.
Yeah. And then when it comes to the Pisco Sour, most attribute that drink to Peru. The Peruvian tales suggest that an American expat in Peru named Victor Vaughn Morris, made a riff on the whiskey sour that he called the Pisco Sour at his bar in Lima, which opened in 1916. And then from there, employees moved to other establishments and started refining and spreading this drink. It called for Peruvian Pisco, lime juice, simple syrup, egg white, ice, and Angostura bitters. However, a recent discovery of a recipe from 1903 that is very similar to it has thrown this whole thing into question, this whole story. We talk about that in every cocktail hour. It's so hard to say. Meanwhile, Chile argues that they invented it, but their version is different. It calls for Chilean Pisco, perhaps, obviously, pica lime and without the bitters and egg whites. One expert argues a Chilean recipe for this drink pops up in 1822.
No.
But the first printed recipe is usually put in the 1940s somewhere. So again.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. Oof. This is especially with a drink as straightforward as a sour. This is kind of what you would do with a liquor around the mid to late 1800s, certainly into the 1900s. I'm excited for people if they have historical sources and they want to pin it to a certain spot and point in time. I'm really excited about all of that history, but also I'm like, oh, people probably did that. That's probably a thing that people did.
Yeah. Indeed. And speaking of, the Pisco Sour may be related to a cocktail that took San Francisco by storm in the 19th century, the Pisco Punch.
Oh, yeah.
I think I've had Pisco Punch. This drink gosh, I really think we could come back and do a whole episode on this drink because it was interesting, the story behind it. But it really symbolized the wealth that was generated for some people and for that city from the gold rush that was happening at that time.
Yeah, yeah. This is a gold rush drink.
Exactly, exactly. And the, quote, original Pisco Punch would set you back $25 in today's money.
The inflation that was going on surrounding the gold rush is what made people rich. At the time, it was not finding gold. No one really got rich finding gold. They got rich selling shovels to people who were trying to find gold. That's not just an apocryphal saying. In a gold rush, sell shovels. That is literally how the economics of that time worked.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And San Francisco, you know, was a port city, and it was one that was flourishing in many ways because of this. Peruvians and their piscos had long been traded in that city, and that was something that only increased during this gold rush as they traveled to San Francisco to put their mining skills to use. A lot of ships bringing pisco also transported pineapples, which people were over the moon over. We've talked about that multiple times. And then you add in some lime and some syrup and perhaps a mysterious other ingredient. More on that in a second. And you have a luxurious pisco punch. It was strong. Customers were only allowed to order two, as the story goes. So one San Francisco bar in particular frequently gets the credit for the invention of the Pisco Punch, and it's the Bank Exchange and Billiard Saloon, which, going back to your point of like kind of these names of bars where you could misinterpret what's going on, I'd be like, the Bank Exchange. So artists of all types frequented this bar. Some lived above it. One popular legend is that Mark Twain got the inspiration for Tom Sawyer from a local man while drinking Pisco Punches there.
Okay.
Rudyard Kipling wrote of it, "No man but one knows what is in it. I have a theory. It is compounded of the shavings of cherubs' wings, the glory of a tropical dawn, the red clouds of sunset, and fragments of lost epics by dead masters." I mean, wow.
That is delightful. I mean, Kipling, what a dude. But that is just a lovely description of a thing.
It is. What a drink. What a drink. And yes, this one person who knows what's in it is supposedly the bartender who claims to have invented it, Duncan Nichol. His name is spelled in multiple ways in a couple places, but generally, who secured the patent for the recipe in 1887, but he never divulged the mysterious ingredient. We'll never know. It's probably nothing. That's a plot point in Kung Fu Panda. Prohibition was not great for Pisco in the United States in the 1920s and 30s, and the Bank Exchange and Billiard Saloon closed. And civil strife in Peru negatively impacted the Peruvian Pisco industry for decades. It wasn't until the 2000s that Pisco started to regain a foothold in the U.S.
Yeah.
Yes. But as we mentioned in the numbers section, it's really
booming.
Taking off.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Pisco Portón's master distiller, Johnny Schuler, or Schuyler perhaps, was awarded the Peruvian Congressional Medal of Honor in 2007 for everything he did to popularize Pisco. And he boasts the world's largest Pisco collection with an estimated 3,000 bottles.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. In 2013, the European Commission granted Peru's request for a geographical origin when it comes to Pisco. But I found this interesting. According to one source I read, around 71 countries recognize Peru as the official home of Pisco, while only a handful recognize Chile. And a few recognize both. And this is very wild to me. Very wild. You can look at the list. Like, there's a whole breakdown of it. Huh.
It is not for us. It is not for us to say one way or another.
It is not. But yes, the debate rages on. I'm sure we'll revisit this one in the future, I bet, with an update.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I hope so.
Ugh. Yeah.
That's juicy. Yeah, maybe. That's great.
I know. Maybe by then you will have tried it.
Hopefully. I'm serious. Like tonight, I'm like,
get me the pisco sour. Yes. Yes. Well, listeners, as always, if you have any thoughts on this, any information that we miss, clarifications, and favorite pisco brands for Lauren and I to try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Let us know.
Yes, please let us know. But in the meantime, I think that's what we have to say about pisco for now.
Mm-hmm. And we do have some listener mail already prepared for you, and we're going to get into that. But first, we're going to get into one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Snowmail. Full of flavor. That's what pisco is. I'm also trying to help you because your voice, I was going to do like a really high pitched thing and I was like, well, that's not what Lauren needs.
Oh,
right now.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm recovering from actually my first bout of COVID, y'all. So I've had really mild symptoms. I'm super lucky. But I thank you for not trying to make me go really high today.
Be terrible to me.
Yeah. No, that would be mean.
I would never.
No.
I would never.
Thank you.
You are most welcome. Megan wrote, so I just finished the Ghee episode where a letter mentions sugar cream pie, and I rushed to write to encourage an episode on it. But then I had a faint memory of trying to explain sugar cream pie in an email to some of my favorite podcasters. Surely that was you two, right? Wrong. It was Holly and Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. They talked about Amish pie on an episode, which sounded very similar to sugar cream pie to me. So I wrote an email to them about it. And then I forgot to send the email. Whoops. Anyway, sugar cream pie is delicious. I'm from a town on the Ohio-Indiana border, so it's pretty popular where I grew up. There are many debates about which recipe is the best, and the restaurants in the area that make it carefully guard their secret touches. One decided to publish their recipe and recipes for other desserts when they went out of business in the 90s in the newspaper, and my mom still has the clippings.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating.
It is. you know we love a good localized regional food. And I mean, add in some pie and I am sold.
Oh, sure. Right, right. And like, okay, like I've heard of this. I don't know exactly what it is or what it's made of. I don't think I've ever had it, but I'm from Ohio originally, mm-hmm. but I'm from the east end of Ohio. I'm from like the Pennsylvania, Ohio border. So
what was the pie like there?
So that is how localized this is.
I love it. Oh my gosh, I love it. And I'm like, now I want to know about Amish pie. Now, and also, like, what pies do I make that people wouldn't know what I'm talking about?
I had never had pecan pie before I moved to Atlanta.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, now we just need to do a whole episode that's just like regions of pies. Where can you get this pie?
That sounds like a whole other podcast.
It does. And I'm tempted to undertake it. I am tempted. But this is definitely on our list. Yeah, because multiple people have written in about it. Love it. Can't wait to learn more. And recipe was included in this, so that's exciting.
Oh, very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Kara wrote, I have a trifecta for you. My dog has a good name, a good costume, and it's a pun. So here's Taco in his costume contest winning costume. He's a beagle in cream cheese.
Yes.
Oh. I actually had fully planned a different costume, but had supply issues and the pouring rain at the last minute and threw this together. It was a hit. Also, Maynard is a baby cow. He came in second in the contest. In pod content related news, it's called Taylor Ham, and it's a staple from my childhood and, let's be honest, adult visits to my grandma's house on the Jersey Shore. The cruelest thing is that I don't live in Jersey, so I can't eat it every day. You'll never believe the shock and happiness when I walked into a deli in Las Vegas and saw a Taylor ham and egg sandwich on the menu. And then enclosed, there are photographs of Taco and Maynard. Taco is indeed a beagle, and this beagle has a little Philadelphia cream cheese placard costume. Beagle and cream cheese. Oh my goodness, what a good dog. And then Maynard is dressed like a little baby cow with the little ears and the little horns. And I think this is also a beagle, but it's hard to tell because it's head on and it's licking its own nose. Because it's
very
just cow-like. It's very excited. And this is such, both of these are very, very, very good dogs. Thank you for sharing them with us.
Yes, we continue to be delighted by all these pictures, all your pun names, all your costumes. So talented. All you listeners are so talented.
Oh, seriously. This is the best.
Yeah. I'm so glad we've asked of this and that you have answered the call. And also, oh my gosh, the amount of it's Taylor Ham, no, it's pork roll emails we've gotten. Listeners, you are in for a treat in future episodes. We've adored every minute of it.
Yeah, yeah. We should keep a tally according to Saver listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's funny. We've gotten memes. I think we've got some statistics. Like, serious business. It's serious business.
The most serious, yes. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So if you want to be involved in that tally, get to writing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And thanks to both of these listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks as always to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com, that's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.